It's the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Graham. And this April, we've got outstanding offers on brand new Mazdas. Plus, we've partnered with One Tree Planted to help reforest areas of Northern California. We pledge to plant one tree for every vehicle we sell. Don't miss the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
It's time to turn on the Shark Spotlight.
Stephen Lawrence is one of the players that the San Jose Sharks acquired in the big trade that sent Brent Burns to the Carolina Hurricanes. Stephen, welcome to the San Jose Sharks. We're really excited to have you. What are your thoughts about the opportunity to come to the West Coast and play in the NHL?
You know what? First of all, thanks for having me, Dan. Yeah, it's an incredible opportunity, and I'm super excited to be a Shark. You know, I haven't played a whole lot of hockey out on the West Coast, you know, playing in Carolina the past two seasons. We're only there for basically a cup of tea, and then we'd head back and, you know, play a ton of games on the east side. And then obviously with COVID the year before that, we didn't really make it out at all. So I'm very excited to be out there in California and get to know the lay of the land a little bit. I'm going to get down there in a couple of weeks and, you know, like I said, just kind of get my bearings, and I'm excited to meet all the players in the team and put some faces to names and stuff like that. So I obviously understand that they're going through a little bit of a rebuild right now, and there's a lot of moving parts and pieces, and, you know, that's the business of the game. But like I said, I'm just excited to be able to get down there and just show what I can do and what I can bring to the organization.
Well, putting face and voice to name on our broadcast is one thing, but we got to get something straightened out. There was a guy who played in the National Hockey League way, way back in the 1970s named Jim Lorenz, and that's how he pronounced his name. Played for the New York Rangers, for the Buffalo Sabres, and his son played some college hockey. Are you related to this guy, and why do you pronounce your name differently?
I am related to him. He's from a little farm town, a couple towns over, like I said, and he would be, there's a, you know, word on the street going around is that he's my grandfather. That's actually not true. He would be a cousin of my grandfather. So we are distantly related. I've only met him once in my life, I believe, but yeah, like you said, he pronounces it, you know, he went by Lorenz, and my whole life growing up, like I said, it was my dad's name. So in that farm town where he's from, they always went by Lawrence. So that kind of got changed last year after my first year in the league. Somebody came up to me and asked me, you know, they said, hey, how do you actually pronounce your name? And I said, well, technically it's this. And then, you know, there was a whole bunch of people tweeting at me after listening to the broadcast last season, how much different Lawrence and Lorenz sound on the air. So, you know, I'll answer to either. You can't really go wrong. But yeah, I guess Lawrence in my family, at least, is kind of the correct way to say it.
Well, that's how we're going to stick with it here on Sharks Audio Network broadcast, Stephen. And your dad, Mark, your mom, Karen, you're born in Kitchener, but you were raised in Waterloo. And I've been to that area quite a bit over the course of my life to visit with friends and so forth. But just talk about the atmosphere where you grew up.
I mean, I'm very fortunate that we have such a tight-knit family and a very tight-knit hometown, too. And, you know, that's kind of when I come home in the summer and I can just kind of unwind and nothing against, you know, being in Carolina and playing anywhere pro hockey. Obviously there's some wonderful cities where you can play hockey and make a living, but home is home for me. And it's just kind of an escape physically and mentally when the season's done, and I can just go home and decompress and spend time with the people who I grew up with and really care about. So there's a bunch of NHL players here now that we get some really good skates and workouts in, but at the same time, you know, my mom and dad, my three sisters, we like to head up to our family cottage and just spend a lot of time there in the summer. So there's not really a whole lot going on in the city of Waterloo, but, you know, we enjoy our time here, and that's why, you know, all our buddies and friends keep coming home, and yeah, we love it. So
why don't you give us an idea for the American audience about what going out to the cottage means? Cause that's such a big deal for anybody who's from Ontario, especially, you know, going out to a place like Haliburton or Parry Sound or someplace like that.
Yeah, that's right. It's a feeling I can't really, you know, really describe, because my cottage is basically my favorite place in the whole world. I've been going there my whole life since I was a kid. It's a family cottage. So some of my best memories growing up there, you know, you play spring hockey and then you go straight to the cottage after that, and you just rip all your clothes off and go jump in the lake. And, you know, you just have a good weekend fishing and campfires and playing tag and all that stuff that you do when you're a kid. So we're not too far north, so we're not right up in, you know, the the Rockies and stuff like that. I guess Muskoka is the area that's called, and it's just beautiful scenery, beautiful lakes all over. But, you know, our cottage is kind of small. It's, you know, there's a lot of wood inside. It's not like a cabin that you'd picture, but we head up there. We're on a nice property, slopes right downhill, and we go right into the lake. So we spend a lot of time going up there and jumping off the dock and having fires right at the lake. So that's kind of my paradise, and that's my escape.
That sounds really idyllic and amazingly awesome. What's it like growing up with three sisters? Did you ever get a hot shower?
Well, there were some early mornings woken up to a lot of screaming, and she stole this and she took that. So there were some times where I just wanted to get that extra 20 minutes of sleep that I didn't need to wake up and do my makeup and hair. But, you know, there was a lot of, some fights, and I treated them like brothers sometimes because, you know, I missed, you know, I'd be able to go to the rink and have my guy time, but then I'd come home and sometimes, you know, my dad would be like, "Hey, these are your sisters. These aren't your teammates. Like, you gotta, you know, treat them like ladies and like women." So, but no, it was great. They're awesome. They're so supportive of me and my career, and they've sacrificed so many things over the years to be able to come watch my games and go to hockey tournaments. And they've missed, you know, dance and horse riding and other sports just to be able to allow me to live out my dreams. So I'm very appreciative of them. And, you know, they're still following me to this day. And obviously they're looking forward to getting some new jerseys because obviously the red and black and white is a little bit outdated. So I'm going to have to hook them up with some jerseys here pretty soon.
I'm sure that'll work out just fine. Where are you in the family out of the four kids? Where are you ranked?
I'm the second oldest. So my older sister, Stephanie, is a year older than me. I have a younger sister who's a year younger than me. And then another sister, younger sister, who's 3 years younger than me.
And do any of them play any sports?
Yes, they all play sports. My older and younger, all three of them played hockey at some point in their lives. And then my older sister played baseball and golf. My younger sisters they rode horses, and they also played baseball, and they all danced and stuff like that too. But they're always, you know, hockey fans to start, but you know, they never really wanted to pursue anything in sports. They're all very, very intelligent girls, and they all use their brains to get some, so you get education that, you know, I kind of skipped out on, I guess you could say, taking the junior hockey route. But no, they're very bright girls, and they're going to do very well for themselves. So I'm just kind of the proud brother that gets to watch them, you know, pursue whatever goal that, or whatever dream job that they're able to manage to score in the next, you know, few years here. So.
And tell us about your parents. Obviously they've been a big influence on your life. Your dad, unlike some other guys with your last name, didn't play in the NHL, but I suspect that he was influential in getting you started early.
Yeah. He's probably my, he's the reason I'm where I'm at right now. Obviously a whole family has made so many sacrifices over the years, but he's kind of the one that really made me believe that it was possible. And, you know, I think I'm basically living out his dream because I think he wanted to make the NHL more than anybody I've ever known in my whole life. And he's kind of the one that told me, you know, you got to do those extra reps. You got to do those things that other people don't want to do. And when you learn that when you're young, because he was a farm boy and he had to do stuff like that. So he just kind of instilled that in me. And that's kind of something that I've taken pride in since I was a little guy and just doing the extra work. And that's just second nature now. So I credit a lot to my dad, and he's my biggest fan. So there's nothing that goes by that gets by him, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on TV or TSN, whatever, NHL Network on XM. Like, he's on the ball, and he's always, you know, he'll text me and he'll say, "Hey, did you hear about this?" before I even have a clue about it. So he's a big time hockey fan, and he can't wait to get down there either to check out the rink and see what everything's like.
Now, when you started playing hockey, you were awfully young. I mean, I hear stories about guys starting out when they were 5 years old, but you actually got on the ice when you were two.
I was out on the ice when I was two, and I think I was playing in a league by three. So, yeah, I guess you could say that's kind of a Canadian thing. I don't know if it's that young, but, you know, you're pretty much, as soon as you start walking, it's like, okay, well, as soon as they're pretty stable on their feet, let's put some skates on them and just see what they can do. So I guess one of the first times my mom placed me on the ice, I just kind of took off. And I think that's when they realized, like, oh, okay, well, he could be a pretty good little hockey player here. So we'll see.
So who were your favorite teams growing up, and who were your favorite players?
Oh, I was a Leafs fan. I was born a Leafs fan, and that would have never, I never would have been allowed to cheer for any other team in that household. My whole room, my mom painted it. It was a big, the old Leafs arena, the ACC, there's a big, huge, ice rink, I guess you could say, the size of my wall. And I got Leaf pictures everywhere. And my favorite player was Matt Sundin. So I had a jersey of his, and that was my first NHL jersey. So I thought that was pretty cool. I got that for my birthday 1 year, and went to some Leafs games over the years. So that was my team growing up, and not big Boston fans, not big Montreal fans, not big Ottawa fans. Those were kind of the rivals. So you wouldn't see many of those, you know, logos or colors flying around the house at all. So
now, I suppose that in your area, there's probably a few Sabres fans and maybe one or two Red Wings fans just because of the geography.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And you know what, my parents still to this day, I mean, and Leafs tickets can get pretty crazy expensive sometimes. And it's, I don't know, for it's just so nice. My parents can just shoot down to Buffalo. It's only a 2 hour drive, and it's a lot cheaper. You get better seats, and they go and have a few beers and spend the night there and come back the next day. They said they love going down to Buffalo, and we have friends in Detroit too, actually. My first NHL game that I got to go watch was in grade one, I believe, first grade. And I got to go watch it in Detroit at the old Joe Louis Arena. And I got to watch like Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Fedorov and all those old names. So it was pretty cool. And I still have pretty fond memories of that game to this day. So,
well, that's a special thing. Your first game is always special when you see a National Hockey League contest. Do you ever think about that when you jump on the ice right now, that maybe when you're playing and doing it as a profession, that there's some kid out there that's in the stands that may be going to his very first game and you want to make it special for him?
Well, Dan, I do it every game. Every single game I sit there at least some point. You know, obviously the more intense games are a little bit different and you're a little bit more locked in and focused, whether it's a playoff game, stuff like that. But there are games where I'll just find myself lost in the bench and I'll just be like, this is best seat in the house. This is, I remember sitting up there and that kid was watching me and now I get to do the same thing. And it's just crazy how it comes full circle. And there are still days where I just can't believe that. Like I said, I have the best job in the world and I think it's the coolest thing. And that's one thing I'll be able to say when I'm done playing is I won't have taken one day for granted in this league, because there's so many kids out there that just want to make it. And to be able to say that, you know, I played there, I played against this guy and I did this. And it's just so special to share those stories with these kids and seeing their eyes light up and be like, well, you can tell them like, hey, this could be you too. I remember being in your shoes, and some kids are even a little bit better off than I was at that age. So it's like to be able to tell a kid that, and then they can go, wow, it's like, this isn't just, you know, a dream. It's, you know, this could be real life. You just got to put the work in. You can explain that to a kid and it just changes their, yeah, I don't know. It's the coolest thing.
The more that I'm learning about you, the more that I've seen you've had a variety of experiences in this game. For instance, most players that get to the NHL were probably the best players in their league at some point. And, you know, you get to the NHL draft lottery and, you know, you see which team selects first and which players get selected first in the draft. In your case, you were involved in a draft lottery when you were awfully young. Tell us about that.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I forgot about that, actually. You've been doing your homework. Yeah, no, I was really young. And I guess there was like four teams in the local area. We had so many kids playing minor hockey that I happened to be pretty good at that age. And we were really young. I'm not even sure the exact age, maybe 9 or 10. But the four coaches got together and you know, the way they go about picking the teams is fair. It's just pretty much like, you know, we'll take this kid, we'll take this kid. And each coach, I guess, takes a turn. It was just like, I get, you know what, it might not have gone like that. I don't know. You get put to a team, and I'm not exactly sure how it went. All I know is that the four coaches got together and basically drew straws and said like, okay, well, this kid's going to get taken first. So whoever draws, you know, the best draw here is going to get that player. So I ended up playing for the Mountain Wolves that year, and we had some success that season. So it was pretty cool. And I didn't even find that out till years later. I had no idea. I didn't care. I just wanted to play the game. So
yeah, that's a terrific story. And of course the flip side of that is that it wasn't always that way for you. For instance, in the OHL draft, you went in the 12th round, which is not exactly being a first rounder and being a phenom player, but you were taken by the Peterborough Petes, which is an organization that's long had a reputation for encouraging things that sound like were important to your parents, encouraging that you don't forget about your education while you are training to be a professional hockey player. Tell us about being selected by that organization, about leaving home and going to Peterborough and playing, and what your billet family was like.
I mean, it all happened so fast. And looking back, junior was the best 4 years of my life. Like, that was so cool, being able to go from, you know, a minor hockey player the year before to, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next year. And then I signed at main camp, and then it's like, okay, well, now you're playing junior hockey against some of the best players in the world. And it's like, holy, like, what happened? Let's slow down a little bit here. We went in there and it was basically, if we make the team, we make the team. If not, we had other options available. But Peter Bro said, you know what? They talked to my parents, and my parents are obviously over the moon that, like you said, they put education first. They wanted you to make sure you're doing good in school and you had good grades. Otherwise you didn't, earn your ice time. You didn't deserve to be out there. So they made you work hard in that aspect. But at the same time, the hockey was second to none. There were so many people in that organization that obviously played, long years of professional hockey and in the NHL. My head coach Jody Hall played, 700-800 NHL games, and I just learned so much there. So it was special to be able to go and play in a city like that, a smaller market city, I guess you could say, but being able to go play in Peterborough and again, live with a Billet family who I still keep in touch with to this day. They are like a second family to me. And honestly, I haven't been able to see him a whole lot since COVID started. So I'm hoping to get down there at least once before I head back down to San Jose, but they played a pivotal part, and I would never be where I'm at today without, the love and support, because they basically take on, the parent role when my parents are a few hours away for the first time in my life. Right. So there's a lot of nights where I needed to, whether there's a shoulder to cry on or just some life advice, my billets were there always. And for the rest of my life, I feel like if I ever had any questions at all, any needs, they'd be there in a heartbeat. So.
Well, also you have to remember, most kids say, I'm leaving home when I'm 18 to go to college, but, you were a little bit younger than that when you went over there. You were only 17. So yep. It's a little bit tougher, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And some players adjust better than others. It's just the nature of the kid. And like I said, my transition was pretty seamless because of how good of people they were. And I got to live with a teammate, and they also had two kids living in the house too, Doug and Catherine. And they were great to me as well. So it was basically like living at home. There was a lot of hustle and bustle, which is what I was used to, growing up again with three sisters and just a busy household. So that was nothing new to me. And it just made me feel right at home. So I was able to go and not worry about, missing mom and dad. I just got to go and play hockey and come home and spend time with, my family, my new family.
You're listening to the Shark Spotlight on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We continue our conversation with the Sharks' Stephen Lawrence. You've got good size. You're 6'4". You're over 200 pounds. Good, solid NHL sort of stock. But were you a late bloomer in terms of growing, or were you always bigger than the other kids?
No, I was a late bloomer. I think when I was drafted to the OHL, I think I was like 5'9" and 130 pounds. So I wasn't big by any means then. So I was fortunate just to get drafted in the first place. So it took a few years to just kind of get my coordination and my, my strength up to, I guess, NHL size now. But over there, it was just like I said, that coordination and trying to put weight on when you're stretching out higher and higher, it's just like you got to figure it out, figure your body out, and then when you step on the ice, it makes it that much harder. Obviously your center of balance is way different from maybe even weeks or months before, so it takes a little bit of getting used to, and that's why I think getting drafted by Carolina, it wasn't my first year in the OHL, it was a year after my draft year in my second year junior that it happened. So I never really thought about it that much. I just wanted to have a successful career in the OHL. And I had always in the back of my mind, I'd hope that, a career playing professional hockey might work out.
Well, one thing that started to happen was the scouts started to notice you. And of course you were drafted in the 7th round by the Hurricanes in 2015. That's the same year, Sharks fans, that the San Jose drafted Timo Meier in the 1st round. He's going to be a teammate of yours, but your club in Peterborough made the playoffs every single year and had a couple of decent runs in the OHL. Tell us what that road to the Memorial Cup feels like and what the experience is like to go through it.
I mean, it's cool. Anytime playoff hockey comes around the corner, it's like the intensity picks up, the excitement, and not just the locker room or around the arena, just in the city as well. It doesn't matter what city you're in. It's like everyone knows what playoff hockey's like, and the intensity, like I said, it just ramps up. So getting up, and that was kind of my first taste of like real playoff hockey. Because like I said, in minor hockey, like it's pretty cool. But when you start having, thousands of people come to your games and you just feel that electricity, you can tell everybody's got to turn up their game a notch or two. And that's why, guys get paid the big bucks. Some of those guys can step up and make plays in big games. And those are the guys that the teams want, because they're winners, and any team wants a proven winner. So to be able to have success in the playoffs is huge. And that's something that, I was fortunate to have in Peterborough. We always made the playoffs, and we always made it to at least the first, second, third round. So it was pretty cool to be able to, you know, experience what it's like to win and lose at the same time, because you got to be able to learn to lose and hate losing to be able to, you know, really get over that threshold and get over that hump, I guess, to keep winning and move further and further.
And so moving further for you was to the ECHL, to Florida, to the Everblades, and then the Charlotte Checkers. And you had a very special experience in 2019, I think, in the playoffs. Tell us about that run.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Like I just said, going further and further in the playoffs and then eventually ultimately becoming a champion is it's hard to think about when you're going through it. And even after it happens, it's hard to, you know, accept that it's all over just like that, because part of the experience is the experience itself is getting there. The stuff you learn along the way and what guys battle through, I mean, everybody sees at the end of the year after, you know, this injury, this player was playing through this and that. And that's what makes hockey such a great game, is guys are really willing to get hurt and play through it for their teammates, for their fans, for their organization. So it's so cool to see guys really, you know, put themselves and their well-being aside for the greater good of the team, and just being able to go through that and experience, you know, losing some big games and winning some big games. It was just, you know, it was an emotional roller coaster, but eventually once we came up on top, we're the Calder Cup champions, is all worth it. So it was very cool to be able to, you know, walk around with a little bit of pride and say, yeah, we did it. Like, this is a very special thing. So I'm very proud of that group to this day. I still keep in touch with a lot of those guys. Like I said, just because of that brotherhood you create when you're, you know, really pushing yourselves to the limit. So it was very special to be a part of that group. And, you know, I still have my ring on display in my room somewhere, but it was very special.
Well, it's still the second most prestigious trophy in all of hockey, the Calder Cup, to win it. And Mike Vellucci was your coach there. You had a lot of really good players that are on the Carolina Hurricanes there. Martin Natchez was there, Morgan Geeky, Jake Bean. These are guys that have a lot of experience in the National Hockey League. Tell us about playing against men, because that's got to be a big step forward when you do win a championship and you're playing in a best of seven against men as a professional. That's got to give you an idea of what the NHL is going to be like, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of teams that load up and go to the Calder Cup finals, it's not just, no, I mean, there's exceptions. There's a lot of rookies who come in and thrive. And you know that those most of those players are going to be NHL players, especially if they're doing that well on that good of a team as a rookie or as a young player. But a lot of those guys do have NHL experience. And, you know, those guys have a taste of what the next level is like. So you're basically going to war against guys who have, you know, families to feed and they're trying to put food on the table for their kids. So, you know, they got money to make too. So they don't want to go out there and get pushed around by a bunch of younger players. So, I mean, those guys don't take anything lightly, and they don't take it easy on you at all. So that's to be expected, obviously, but you know, you go out there and it's just like, wow, okay, this is war. This is maybe what the NHL would be like, because, you know, I had never had one NHL game to that point. So I didn't really know what to expect, but I think playing in those finals was a pretty good taste. And it was just, okay, this is maybe what I got to get to be able to, you know, take that jump and be able to play at the next level.
By that time, of course, you had taken part in a couple of training camps and you got to the NHL in your fourth year as a pro in 2020. But give us just a clue about Rod Brind'Amour and about his approach to the game and about the fact that we still hear that he's in as good a shape as most of the players in the NHL, and that he's so devoted and focused every day. And what effect that had on you?
I can't say enough good things about Roddy. I don't even know where to start right now. He was just, bottom line, he would never expect anything from a player that he wouldn't himself do. And he had obviously been through basically every situation you put yourself in. You know, he's a cup champ. He lost in the finals. He played however many, you know, he played over 1,000 NHL games. He had success as a, you know, a power forward, as a goal scorer. He played all kinds of roles. So he knew every single guy inside and out of that locker room, what they are capable of doing. And he knew what buttons to press for each different guys. And he was able to make, you know, the wheel turn as one. So he demanded a lot, but he just wanted you to work hard. At the end of the day, if you made a mistake because you were being too aggressive, he'd rather you do that than it's because, you know, you froze up, you did make a decision in time. You know, he was all about being in your face and playing hard to play against and just being relentless. So the leadership and he found a way to get us motivated to play night in and night out. You know, 82 games a year, that's hard to do. But he found a way to find a speech that, you know, just kind of lit a fire under us. And, you know, we didn't always perform up to expectations. There was a lot of times where he took the blame for losses that weren't his fault. We just, you know, came out flat. But he really is an unbelievable coach. And I had the privilege of playing for him for 2 years. And if there's ever players that do have the opportunity to play for him, just listen to everything he says and learn as much as you can, because you shouldn't take it for granted. It truly is a privilege to be able to learn from a guy like Rod.
One other guy you played for is Ryan Warsawski. I know Mike Vellucci was the coach of the team when you won the Calder Cup the next year. Ryan Warsawski won the Calder Cup this past year with the Chicago Wolves. So give us kind of an insight as to what a young coach like that does to help your career.
Yeah, I mean, he basically, again, another guy who I wouldn't be here without him today. I was buried kind of on that Calder Cup run. I was, split that season in the East Coast League. And there was a lot of guys who were playing ahead of me in the lineup, which, you know, was fine. Again, I got to learn a lot being a guy who was kind of in and out in the lineup during that Calder Cup run. But at the same time, he called me in the off season going into the following season after we lost about 15 players from that Calder Cup team. And he just said, look, you're going to be playing a lot bigger role this year. I'm not going to give it to you, but I'm going to give you all the opportunities. And if you come in, you work hard and you take it, they're all there for you. And I was fortunate that, you know, that's all I needed, that spark. And I went in there and I did just that. And he was true to his word, and he put me in all kinds of situations, and he really encouraged me and developed me into the NHL player I am today. So a guy who is basically almost like a Roddy 2.0. He's like a bulldog. He's feisty. He's in your face. He just wants the best out of every player, and he's all about hard work too. So that's a guy who the Sharks, you know, they couldn't have picked maybe a better assistant coach, a guy who hopefully has a long career in the NHL, because, you know, he sees the game, thinks the game so well. But, you know, again, another guy who just can get a lot out of his players.
All good news to hear. One thing that we keep hearing about you is that work ethic and continually trying to improve your game are two of your best qualities. But how would you describe the type of player that you are and the type of play that you're bringing to San Jose?
You know, I think I play a good, smart two-way game. I like to think that, you know, my offensive zone can improve. And I think that's going to come with confidence and just being able to play a little bit more free in the offensive zone. And I'm looking forward to doing that this season. But I think my play in the D zone obviously creates a lot of my offensive opportunities, just because I think that's where a lot of the offense starts. And then if guys on the other team are cheating like that, I like to think I can make a good breakout pass and just kind of be a good complimentary player off the rush. And, you know, I like to be big and play big in front of the net. So I'm going to spend a lot of time in front of the net and hopefully trying to take the goalie's eyes away and just being options for guys. And I just want to kind of hound the puck down low and again, create offensive opportunities when I can, just create energy.
Do you see yourself more as a center iceman or a winger?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer. I played center a lot my first year, and then last year I was kind of all over the map. So I'm very, very comfortable in all three positions. It would honestly just depend on where the coach needed me. I like to think that I can be used in, you know, a lot of different situations and line combinations. So I just take pride in kind of being that Swiss Army knife kind of versatile player.
So that means you're probably working on faceoffs quite a bit at practice. You're looking at perhaps working on your skating and your edges and all that work in the summertime. Are all these things part of the way you train?
That's it, pretty much. I basically just try and do as much as everything as I can. I love being on the ice and working on whatever it is. So I take pride in my work ethic, like you said, but I still have fun playing the game. And it doesn't matter if it's practice or a game, I'm having fun. That's what I'm going to do day in and day out for, you know, my whole career.
Playing the game is fun, obviously, but it's also your profession. And so you have to take it really seriously. What's the toughest part about getting through an 82 game schedule because of how grueling it is and how you get through those tough times?
Yes, I think the toughest thing is consistency. It's easy to be good and go through stretches where things are good, but I think a lot of your character the team's character and identity comes from when times are tough and you face adversity and what it takes to get through those challenging times is kind of really what gives your team, you know, that, like I said, that identity and kind of builds character for a lot of guys, and especially guys who have been on winning teams. And And, you know, I've been fortunate to be on some winning teams, and I've been on some losing teams as well, not at the NHL level, but I think as long as you stay on the same page and you don't go off and get selfish, you got to stick to one group and have one goal in mind, and you all got to stay tugging on the same rope. And, you know, then success will lead and you'll get out of those slumps. But obviously winning is great, but you're not going to win all 82 games in the season. If you do, good for you. But it's very hard to do. It's very hard to win at this level. And so I guess if you can do that consistently, that's probably the toughest thing to do.
How much does the disappointment of not going as far as you expected in the Stanley Cup playoffs motivate you for transforming the San Jose Sharks back into a playoff team like they have been for so many years?
Yeah, I'm excited for the challenge because, again, I used to watch a lot of those Shark runs where it just seemed like they came so close every year. And it was honestly disappointing as a Leafs fan to watch how close and how many good players they had come through. And it was just, you know, frustrating being like, oh, they're right there, but they just can't get over that hump. So, I'm excited to try and bring that, maybe the culture and the experience that I gained in, you know, those two short years into San Jose's locker room and try and share it with whoever, you know, needs maybe advice or a crutch, and just hopefully lead by example. And in those big games, if, you know, a play needs to be made where I can either sacrifice myself, put my body on the line or something like that, then I'm all for doing stuff like that.
Steven, what do you know about the city of San Jose and how much time have you actually spent here? Probably not much.
Yeah, no, I don't know a whole lot about San Jose. I actually don't know a ton about California, to be completely honest. I just know, you know, geographically, or you're right close to San Jose, you're right near the, or to San Francisco, sorry, you're kind of in that Bay Area, you're close to a lot of, you know, cities that have a lot going on. But we only spent, I think, one night there last year after we played the Sharks, and we were out of there the next day, either it was Anaheim or LA. But yeah, I didn't get to spend a whole lot of time there. But like I said, I'm excited to get down there and just, you know, try to get my bearings a little bit.
Do you know anybody on the San Jose Sharks all that well?
James Reimer, he's the only guy. So he reached out to me after I signed, and he was all excited. So he helped me with like a realtor lady to that I can go look for places, stuff like that. But other than that, you know, I'm pretty much going in with my eyes closed here. So if anybody has any suggestions on, you know, places to eat, nice areas to live, this and that, then you know, I can check my DMs and hopefully Sharks fans can help me out a little bit too.
Hey, listen, you have any message that you'd like to give to Sharks fans as to what to expect and what you're looking forward to doing and what the Sharks need to do to, in your mind, get back to where they need to be?
Just watching what Mike Greer has done so far in this offseason has made me really excited, just because, you know, you got to bring good people into the organization, and that's what the Canes did to kind of steer the ship in the right direction. And then when you bring in, you know, right coaching staff and the right pieces to the puzzle, everything usually falls into place. So I'm really excited to be a part of the group. I'm excited to get down there and just play my hardest. So I think a lot of guys are kind of in the same boat as that. And let's get the ship going in the right direction. And yeah.
It's been great spending time with you, Steve. And we look forward to seeing you and all the best. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Really appreciate the talk. Take care.
Our thanks to Stephen Lawrence for joining us in the Spotlight today. I'm Dan Rusinowski.
The Shark Spotlight is a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.